Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Live from T-Mobile Park, it is Mariners opening day, and we have a lot of important things we're watching for this season. Can the Mariners make the playoffs? Will all these offseason additions end up paying off? Will Mitch stay healthy? Will Julio be MVP? Will any of these amazing starters be in the Cy Young running? But most importantly, we're focused on the short term. Bump, you gotta start fast.
Last year, they started off 4-8, and then they rattled off four games in a row. Julio's first game, he was 0-4, then he goes 2-5. Fran started off hot. He was 3-4 with a bomb, three RBIs. So it's a little bit of everywhere when you look at the individual, but as a team, they didn't start off hot. In April, they were 11-15, mm-hmm. then picked it up in May. Obviously, in the summertime, they did their thing. They had three losing months last season. You gotta eliminate at least one of them things to really be in contention. But yeah, man, it's all about starting off hot. And to me, starting off hot doesn't mean Julio goes 3-3. Again, it's a marathon. Get a crop before you walk. Yeah. All the sayings you want to put out there. I just want to see smart at-bats. That's all I'm looking for. To me, that's starting off hot. The one thing you can rely on, or you think you can rely on, is that Castillo's going to set the tone on the mound.
That's exactly right. And as Justin Hollander mentioned on and with us earlier, a history of really good opening days for the Mariners. Now, last year, as you guys remember, unfortunately, opening day was, I think, the only win from that series. Mm-hmm. It ended up not being so great. Let's hope they get a sweep this time. I feel really good about the team that they're putting out, at least against the Red Sox. So let's focus on what some experts have said about starting fast, because you're right, Bump. It is important, and they have some opportunity. Cut number one, let's take a listen to what ESPN's Tim Kirkjian told us.
That is really important, because when you look at, say, the Rangers, if they can somehow get their way through the first 2-3, maybe even 4 months, and then they get Scherzer and DeGrom back. Right. And I'm not suggesting they're going to come back and be great again, but what if they are? You better get ahead of them early, because in theory, they could be really good late.
So again, the importance of starting quickly is so that you can get ahead of other teams in the AL West. And we're going to welcome on team chairman John Stanton right now. Pardon the brief pause on my part. We're switching headphones here. Chairman of the Mariners, John Stanton, joining us right now. And we're just going to take a really quick look at this team, have some fun on opening day. And it's a really exciting opening day. We already talked with Mandy Lincoln, John, about all of the excitement and the good stuff that's happening here with the festivities. How do you feel in general about just another start to the season here?
It's just the most exciting day of the year. I keep telling all my friends, this should be a national holiday. Baseball opening day, what could be more American than this?
Yeah, love opening day, especially here at T-Mobile Park. Do you still get nervous for these things? Like, what are your emotions like when you're driving up to the ballpark and you know your boy's about to take the field?
I probably get nervous about different things than the players do, but it's just incredibly exciting. I get nervous about the weather. If we're going to have a flyover, it'd really be nice to have the roof open. And I worry about our fans getting here safely and all. And I got in a hailstorm yesterday afternoon in Bellevue in middle of the afternoon. I'm thinking this can't be spring.
It's crazy. John, you know Seattle. It's crazy spring weather. It could be raining this morning and 65, 70 degrees at 4 p.m. You never know what's gonna happen here. It should be somewhat clear. Obviously, we've got the roof closed right now, as John said, hoping that we can open that up for all the fun stuff you guys have going on. Let's talk about what's on the field, too. How do you feel about the team you guys got this year?
It's awesome. Justin and Jerry have done just a great job of putting the team together. Talking with Scott a couple of times yesterday, I think he's incredibly excited. This is the best team he's had the opportunity to manage. We had some holes, and I think we filled them in an incredibly good way.
What's the communication like between you and Hollander and Service and DePoto, all the involved? Like, what's your relationship like, and how do you guys get prepared for a season?
Well, you guys are in our offices today, right? We're sitting here looking out at the field. About 20 feet from here is my office, and next to my office is Jerry's on one side and Katie on the other side. Next to Jerry is Justin. So all of us are talking all the time.
Do you guys have a group thread? Or are you like, you know what, just come to my office. Don't text me. Just walk over.
If I had to guess that Justin and Katie, who are in their early 40s,
have a
thread, Jerry and I are trying to figure out how to do that.
You're like, I'll send a letter over.
Exactly.
I'll do
Snail
that.
Snail mail.
Exactly. Well, what are some of your favorite opening day traditions? Because Bump and I were talking with Mandy about what people especially love doing. We've been talking about food that we can't wait to eat. Like, it is just this thing that sometimes is so nostalgic.
Yeah. My personal tradition is the night before, I'll have a nice glass of wine and watch Field of Dreams. For me, that's the ultimate father-son. Connects me to my father, connects me to my two sons. And baseball is all about, to me, connecting families and friends. In terms of the coming to the ballpark, I really love the run around the bases for the little kid from.
I think they did Make a Wish.
Hospital.
Yeah,
it's Make a Wish this year, and it's been different kids, Children's Hospital in many cases. It tears me up. I'm really personally excited about Nelson Cruz. I'm going to go see him after this interview and have lunch with him. Nelson has been probably probably my favorite player. I've visited him in the Dominican, and I know his parents and his sisters and all. And so to have him come back, I talked to him. I invited him to come back and sign it. I'm not sure we're supposed to say this.
But John, you should.
Okay.
No, you should.
Let's put it this way. We're going to honor Nelson in a very special way so that he is forever a part of the Mariner family.
Very cool.
Awesome. I'm getting to the age where all my buddies are buying new homes and renovating their house. And the first thing we do, we get into the new house, like, show me around. Let me see the 5-car garage or whatever you got going.
Wow. So, I want to be in your neighborhood.
What are these friends that you're hanging out with?
It's not my neighborhood. Trust me. I don't live in that neighborhood. It's my buddy's neighborhood. He's in Gig Harbor. Good for you. You're doing great things, Brian.
5-car garage.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm like, it's a little apartment down here, dog. But tell me, how's the house? How's the park looking? I heard you got some upgrades to the facility. How are things doing?
We did. We're still glowing over the improvement of the press club downstairs from where we are right now. And we made some tweaks to that, I think, are very positive. New walk-off market. It's been amazing, the throughput, the ability for people to go up and get a beer and not miss a pitch, right? So, it's our fifth walk-off market, and I think that's a huge positive. The little things are so positive here. We make this ballpark, we live to a standard of having this be one of the best ballparks in all of baseball. We have a public facilities district, a county state partnership that technically owns the building, and they evaluate us every year against a series of the best ballparks in baseball, and they tell us what we need to do, and we have a partnership with them. Everything from the painting to the maintenance of the restroom facilities, a lot of changes there, and nobody notices most of those things. But if they're not fixed, if
then
they're not
notice.
Good, yeah. Then people notice. It's like having a tray table dirty and when you're on an airplane. Notice, that's the first thing you notice when you pull it down and there's a ketchup stain there. We try to make sure that this ballpark is clean, friendly, safe, and inviting for our fans.
Feels like such the case with any job. Like, we've talked this about DBs. You only notice when you make a mistake.
Right.
I wanted to talk, we're speaking with Mariners Chairman John Stanton right now. Thank you for joining us quickly here. I wanted to just talk about Jerry for a minute. This is what, year 8, 9 of Jerry with this organization?
Yeah.
Year 9. What have you made of just, not just the team he's built, of your guys' relationship, of kind of what's been going on here, nearly a decade?
Well, he and I came in together. Mm-hmm. So, from my point of view, it's been a great partnership, and we've worked together. I think Jerry's grown enormously. But when we interviewed Jerry in the fall of 16, I think it was, the dynamic was, first thing Jerry said is, you got to think of the ballpark as your first player. And I'd never thought about that before. He talked about the notion that you got to build a team around the ballpark, mm-hmm. take advantage of the fact that this is a good pitcher's ballpark. And in fact, then he has assembled an unbelievable staff, both starting staff. And, I think it's one of his superpowers is the way he, and when I say Jerry, I really mean the 100 people that work with Jerry, as well as Jerry and Justin themselves. They've done their superpower is to put together a series of guys that maybe in some cases other people gave up on, that turn into relief pitchers that have magic. And, you know, we talk about pitchers that have been traded from here. Several of those pitchers that have gone on to have great success were picked up off the waiver wire. Mm-hmm. You know, Kendall Graveman was a terrific guy. His career as a starting pitcher was over because of an injury, and we turned him into, Jerry and the team turned him into, a tremendous relief pitcher. And we've been able to continue to build the team by having that superpower of being able to create a very special bullpen.
It's nice that you guys have that approach, taking maybe a diamond in the rough, someone gave up on, and giving them a platform to enhance their career. And then you get a guy like Julio, who you just know is going to do some great things.
Don't have to do a ton.
Don't have to do much, Julio. You get him out there, you let him ball and do his thing. But I've asked this question to several people in the organization because I feel like I get a different answer every time. Just how has Julio grown? Because I think you can look at it from a whole bunch of different angles and see the growth there. How do you see Julio growing?
Well, I'm about 6'4", at least I was at my peak. So I see Julio grow from, I think the first time I met him, he was a couple inches shorter than me, and now he's a couple inches taller. And that's representative of, he's turned into an incredible man and an incredible athlete. He has incredible talents on the field. I absolutely love the guy because of the person he is and the kind of, the way he deals with folks. It was 3 years ago, before he was on the major league roster, we were at spring training, and he was showing up on the concourse in Peoria, handing out gift cards. He found a kid who had a New York Yankees cap on. He says, "Come on, we need to take you inside of the
switch this the, up
exactly." And there were no cameras. There was no social media. There were no people. In fact, our social media people found out about this when other people posted it.
Yeah.
Said, "Where is that kid? We need to go get him."
Guarantee he was a Mariners fan now.
And you know, you look at the way he took over the Home Run Derby both last year and in Seattle and the year before in L.A. I mean, he is a special, special athlete. And I think I heard you guys talking about him earlier. I mean, sometimes when we're getting excited about Mitch Haniger coming back and Mitch Garver and all the new guys, Polanco, Canzone having mm-hmm. a terrific spring, we forget that we've got one of the faces of the game, the players that I think Major League Baseball thinks could easily be the MVP this year. And I certainly believe that. And the opportunity for us to have that young man grow up in front of us. You know, players develop, particularly through their early to mid-20s, they rarely have their best seasons as a 21 or 22-year-old. He's been an all-star and a mm-hmm. silver slugger in both of his seasons. He's been in the MVP voting, I think top 10 in the MVP voting both years, and he's just getting better. You know, I saw him and I saw him a number of times. I had a one-on-one with him when I first got to Arizona in the middle of February, and he wanted to talk about what the vision is for the team. You know, he wanted to talk about how this organization saw him and how we see the opportunities that we've got in front of us to win the AL West, to win the World Series, and that's what he wants to do.
Yeah. We have to let you go. You have a very busy day, but John, I am going to have you help me with one final thing. So we're going to be in a segment when you leave, so we'll continue, but the segment that we're about to do is a bit later in the show is going to be Call Your Shot, which is where I'm having Bump and Curtis make some kind of prediction just for tonight's game. And if either of them are right, I'm going to bring in donuts tomorrow. So for a gift for you guys, I'll enter a third submission from John.
Nice.
To increase your odds. So we'll just go with an easy one. Who hits the first home run for the Mariners?
Canzone.
Okay, so if Canzone hits the first home run, donuts for you. On me, on John. He is Mariners chairman John Stanton. John, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll let you go. You got to go get lunch with Nelson. All right, you guys, let's get to 4 Down Territory.
This is 4 Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
4 Down, as rule changes happen at the pro level, what needs to happen eventually on the amateur levels?
All right, so we know things are changing when it comes to the rules of the game. We're talking about the hip drop. We're talking about the kickoff rules, the reviewing if a passer is down or intentional grounding. There's a lot of change that's happening, but you got to make sure that these changes hang around for a while. Once they do hang around for a while, you got to start seeing that happen on the college levels, on the high school levels, and on the Pop Warner levels, because these kids have to be prepared to play the game the way they're playing it on the NFL level if they get the opportunity to do so. Even if you are in high school, you got to make sure that you're playing with the same rules as the college level when it comes to just the big changes in the game. So I'm interested. I think you got to wait a year or two to see which rules are going to hang around, but you got to start getting these kids ready, because I don't think anyone's teaching a hip drop. I've never seen at the college.
Kids, pros, here we go.
I've never seen anyone teach a hip drop. I think that kind of happens just when you're in that situation. But making them aware, like, look, you're going to get a penalty for this, or how to scheme up the new kickoff return rules. So, yeah, as the game starts to change, you got to see these rules implemented on the amateur level. And I'm excited. That gives coaches something else to coach up.
Second down. Apologies if I butcher this name. Who is it Louis Reese Zammit? And why are you excited to see him during the 2024 preseason?
So this is a young man. He's 21 years old. He's 6'3", about 200 pounds. He's from the United Kingdom, Wales specifically. He's a rugby player. Now he became, I'm going to jack this club up, Gloucester Club Premiership. All right, that's the highest level of rugby over there in the United Kingdom. He became a pro at 18 years old, the youngest ever in that club. The reason why we're talking about him is because he just signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. I saw that he signed with the Chiefs, so I went back. I'm looking
at. Is that why you were watching rugby?
That's why.
Taylor and I were like, why is this guy watching rugby tape?
I'm watching rugby because I'm watching this young man move. He ran a 4.43, I want to say, when they timed him in the 40. It was part of the NFL International Football Program, and I'm trying to see how he will factor in today's game. The hardest part about football is understanding the position, your responsibilities, and the flow of the game. But with the changes to the kickoff rule, I think that's going to be perfect for him, because that is essentially a rugby play. You get the football, you run, you make guys miss. He is a strong young man. I'm watching these rugby players bounce off of him. He has great field awareness, good vision, good speed. He can go coast to coast. I'm excited about this dude. There's going to be a transition. There's going to be a learning period when it comes to him understanding the game and how it's played. But what do you do with your best athletes? You get them the ball on a kick return and a punt return, and you say, just go. We used to play a game called Kill the Carrier when I was in middle school. You toss the ball up, you catch the football, and you got 30 or 40 guys trying to take you down. You try to get them down to the ground. That's what I see in rugby. I'm sure there's way more to it. I understand that. But the fundamentals of football, can you make guys miss? Can you break tackles? Can you score touchdowns? You put him in the kickoff position, I think we can see something happen.
I'm going to interrupt myself to say that they're testing some new graphics for the stuff they're doing at T-Mobile, and we don't want to spoil anything, but it's going to look very cool when it's dark.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Can you see the vision?
Yeah, I see it.
All of a sudden, we saw it out of it, and I was like, whoa.
That's clean.
Okay. Third down. There's been a lot of movement this offseason in the NFL, but here are some names available. What names intrigues you?
Not necessarily for the Seattle Seahawks, but just names that people know and are interested in. Odell Beckham, one of them. He is rumored to be interested in the Miami Dolphins. They are interested in him as well. I can't imagine him over there with the Dolphins. Again, he'd be the third or fourth receiver, but probably the best third or fourth receiver in the NFL. Another guy, Hunter Renfro. Remember when he signed like a $100+ million deal with the Las Vegas Raiders, and all of a sudden things went bad? I think it was Josh McDaniels who kind of jacked his whole career. At least with the Raiders, we'll see where he falls. Yannick Ngakoue, we were interested in him a few years ago.
I remember this young man.
He's on the market now. I'm not sure what his year was like last year, but that's the name that popped up and got my attention. Andre Dillard, local talent here, went to Wittenville High School. He is available. He's a tackle. Yesterday, you talked about depth at the tackle position. He's a guy that you can just bring in at camp and see what's going on. Also, Phil Haynes is out there. He's available. Do you bring him back? You talk about depth at the position and guys with familiarity. Phil Haynes has exactly that, but it's up to the offensive line. I believe his coach name is Huff for the Seattle Seahawks, came over from the University of Washington. Are they going to take a look at him? So I just went through some free agents real quick, and those are the names that popped. A bunch of other names popped up, but those are the ones that that stuck out to me.
Fourth down. All right, again, just one of two non-Mariners, non-baseball segments today. This one is going to still harken back to a segment we did earlier, with it being Bold Take Thursday for the Mariners. What's a bold take you have for the Seahawks?
Bold Take Thursday, Seahawk edition, opening day. we're doing football right now.
I know. We only have these two. We're going to talk some college basketball with our next segment, The Timeline, and then everything else is Mariners.
My bold prediction is that Mike McDonald is going to get Coach of the Year. He's going to get Coach of the Year. These guys are going to win 10 games. They're going to get into the playoffs. He's going to fix this offense, defense. The offense is going to look great. They're going to praise Mike McDonald. He's going to change the way the league views the Seahawks. Now, I don't think they see him the Seahawks in a negative way, but they view the Seahawks as an organization that's trying to find themselves again. They're going on one of those Aaron Rodgers retreats and sitting in dark rooms and get in touch with their feelings. That's where the Seahawks are
darkness
right now.
Retreat.
So I'm calling it right now. Mike McDonald going to do something that Pete Carroll's never done, which he should have gotten this award before. Coach of the Year going to Mike McDonald.
That is true. Now, the Seahawks did not make the playoffs. There's a brand new head coach. You have the pieces there for Coach of the Year, because while there have been coaches who have done amazing jobs, it typically goes to a team that's like, what was a not great team that became really good or surprised people? Now,
new coach too. They lean on the new coaches.
Lean on the new coaches. Now I'm looking around trying to think of some other potential. I mean, Harbaugh, if the Chargers make a deep run, they'd have to make a deep run because they have the quarterback. And they're going to have presumably, you know, a Marvin Harrison Jr. type if Arizona doesn't take him, or Roma Dunze or someone if they don't trade out of five.
Yep.
So you're going to have pieces. I think he'd have to make a deeper playoff push to be Coach of the Year.
He's got
to
win one or two of them things. You got Raheem Morris as well over in Atlanta, I think is a candidate for the deal. And you know what? What about Mike Tomlin? What if Mike Tomlin is able to win that division over the AFC North, the toughest division in football, with a new quarterback, all the moves that they made? Maybe he's in the mix too.
Hear me out. If Mike Tomlin wins Coach of the Year, it means Russell Wilson's Comeback Player of the Year.
That's a two for one.
Right? Because it would have to be. He's not. I mean, look, I don't want to be rude here. I mean, he could do it with Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields is just young. He's more raw. Russ has a lot of doubters now, but he's also done it before.
He's been there. He's done it. I like that. If Tomlin gets Coach of the Year, Russ gets Comeback Player of the Year.
All right. So we have a lot of opening day festivities coming your guys' way. We're going to take a look at the 26-man roster released earlier this morning, kind of do a roster breakdown, talk about what to expect from this team coming up at noon. We've got Call Your Shot, Make Your Prediction for tonight's game, where Curtis and Bump have a chance for some winnings. We're going to, instead of taking a look around the NFL, take a look around MLB today. Opening day for a lot of teams. Very, very exciting. Two games already postponed, though, because of rain. Before we get to any of that, though, we are going to take a slight break from baseball to talk about some really big college hoop storylines. Don't go anywhere. It's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is opening day. Bump and I are live from T-Mobile Park, and we're taking a look at what's trending on your own timeline. So let's tell you what you need to know in the world of sports today. We are actually going to get started with a couple college basketball stories. New Stanford head coach Kyle Smith went viral for sharing a special reason why he chose to leave Washington State and take a new job with the Cardinal, cut number 7. Take a listen.
And he put us in touch with, it's Antonio Hardon, who's a Stanford Autism Center. Like I said, hard not to cry, but to have that opportunity for our family, my son, to have maybe more resources, just honored and thankful. And you all get to know Bo soon enough. And also, we'll have another part of our family to mention that he has a very special caregiver. She's going to move down here, and Emily Hoot. And no chance not crying. So you guys will know, and it's a joyous cry, I promise you.
Bump, you are a parent. You're a Coug, so you've been following the story, and you're also someone who mentioned his son when he left and took the job that Stanford has, the Autism Center, that's really helpful. What were you thinking seeing this story once it went viral?
Man, I'm a dad. I felt him. You do whatever you can to provide the most comfortable life for your family, especially your kids. Man, you sacrifice so much. Now, I know people can look at this situation and say, well, what's he sacrificing? He's getting more money. He's making a move. It is a stepping up in his career. But I guarantee you that was probably the deciding factor. Mm-hmm. The fact that his son can get some of the attention that he needs. In Pullman, you don't have those same type of resources. Out there in Cali, Northern California, especially being associated with Stanford University, you get that, man. So I'm happy for him. I felt that hopefully this gets some of the aggression off him. I don't think he was met with the same aggression that maybe Pat is met with.
I agree.
Because people understand, like, look, you're a coach, you make your moves. But this is just an insight of his decision-making process. And I was happy that people got to see it. I know he's going to look back at this, but, man, why was I crying? You know, that's what guys do sometimes. But it was good. Coach, don't you worry about that.
I was really touched watching it. And I always – I'm an empathetic crier. Like, when I see or hear other people crying, I always feel it crying. Like, it's none of my business. Like, it doesn't affect me in any way. But something about seeing and hearing people – get really emotional, all of a sudden you start getting emotional. Yeah. And you're like, I don't even know why. I just can't. I did that during Carol's press conference. You're like, why am I crying? This isn't about me. But it's just, it's really touching, and I'm happy for his family that they have this opportunity. I know that it's really hard for the Cougs, and obviously it's getting tougher, right? Let's talk about the program itself. Now in kind of a weird spot, not only without their head coach, still looking for one, but all Pac-12 guard Miles Rice plans to enter the transfer portal following Smith's departure. He led the team in scoring, was named Pac-12 Rookie of the Year this past season. What do you make of this news?
Yeah, that's just what it is. That is what it's going to be. I was talking to Taylor, our guy back here, and we're like, look, we're going to be lucky if we just get 1 year with a guy. Get 1 year with a guy, get the most you can out of him. And until WSU is able to put $3.5 million in the bank when it comes to paying these athletes, this is what it's going to be. And even if you have that money in the bank to pay these athletes, I think a lot of them want to get paid, and they want to go to a program where they can possibly win a national championship. So whoever gets Rice, you get a resilient kid, because you know he had cancer. He battled through that. You get a leader. You see the way he performed during the NCAA tournament. You get an all-around good guy. So it's unfortunate for the university, but again, understand what the game is today and how Wazoo has to maneuver. This is going to happen. Just keep recruiting good players. Get a year out of them if you can, and wish them well.
Are you anticipating more players entering the portal?
Yeah, Wells is probably going to answer that thing. I would assume that he'll be out of here too.
All right. Let's stick with college basketball. We'll jump to this UConn story. You can count UConn head basketball coach Dan Hurley as not a fan of the transfer portal. Cut number 9. Here's what he had to say.
I don't think you should play in 5 schools in 4 years or 4 schools in 4 years. I don't think that's healthy for the individual, for the long-term, like 50, 60-year life after their playing career is over. Because there's no connection with a university, a coaching staff, a network of alumni that could help create opportunities once basketball is over. I just think, whether it's a one-time train, I don't know. I don't like that window being open right now. And I just don't think it's healthy for somebody to be able to change schools like underwear.
Bump, when you were a player, you've talked about almost entering the transfer portal, that did have different rules when you were a student, but yeah. You almost entered the transfer portal, decided not to, stayed at Washington State, really enjoyed the rest of your career. Why didn't you? Are you glad you didn't? And also, what do you think of what Hurley had to say about the way the transfer portal works today?
I didn't, because I went home and my mom said, you started it, you finish it over there in Pullman. And then the connections I made with my players, they're calling me, and I go, you're right, man. I don't need to go anywhere. Coach is right. One thing he said really hit home, it's the networking. That is one big reason why you go to college, the network that you develop while you're in college. There's a reason why I'm still in this state, because I went to Washington State. I played for the Seahawks for a little bit. Everyone I know from college is here. Every connection I have is here in Washington. I go to California. I'm from there. I don't have the same connections. I couldn't get the same opportunities. So he hit home, because a lot of these guys, most of these guys, ain't going to play in the NBA. And when you bounce around from school to school to school, who do you associate with? Which games are you going to go to? Who do you know? There's going to be some multimillionaire that you went to school with that you had an opportunity to connect with, maybe bounce ideas off of. You don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest one. And then what are we teaching kids? Oh, I don't like this. I'm just going to give up and bounce. I'm like, look, let them transfer 1, maybe 2 times. After that, you got to stick it out. So eventually, I think we're going to see some type of regulation. I'm with Coach 100%. I'm also with the player to where they should be able to make 1 or 2 decisions when it comes to the trajectory of their career.
I was going
to
say, how do you balance? Because you and I are both pretty progressive isn't the right word, but pretty modern when it comes to, you know, how college football, basketball, athletes in general should be allowed to operate with NIL deals and all that stuff. And yet, having been a college football player who really benefited from those relationships, you have your own ideas of how some of these things should work.
Yeah.
If you were to make a change to college transfer portal rules, maybe something else, what change would you make?
I would, one, you got to be at your school for at least 2 years before you can dip. And maybe you can only make one move, possibly two. I would say one, because you're still learning how to tough things out and you're still out of school long enough to where you can make these connections and just learn about yourself. You learn so much about yourself as a student in college or just as a human being during that period of time in your life, right? So if you're bouncing around and trying to make yourself as comfortable as possible, what are you going to do when you're 28 years old and things get tough? Because things are going to get tough in your life. If I don't care if you have the most money in the world, the least money in the world, there's going to be a time where things just ain't working and you got to battle through. You lose that grit if you keep bouncing around like that. So 2 years, one move, ride it out.
Next and last story in the timeline, never be afraid to take a shot at your parents when you can. That's UW defensive coordinator Steve Belichick getting in a shot on his dad, one Bill Belichick, when asked how they're different from each other. Cut number eight. Take a listen.
I got a job and he doesn't. he knows that. But yeah, I mean, I look up to my dad. He's a mentor to me, but I'm myself. And
why am I not shocked that Bill Belichick's own son is just as cold-blooded as he is?
Hey, I'm kind of shocked, though, because he's cold-blooded, but in a humorous way. You know, Bill don't move like that.
No.
Yeah, I've seen him smile once, and I was after one of his Super Bowls. Like, I've never seen
just a little
this
grin.
Dude experience that. Here's the thing, though. You know his son is a piece of him. So somewhere deep down inside of Bill Belichick, there's this side of that humor. Mm-hmm. But no, I love it, man. You got to take your shots at your dad whenever you can, especially when you're employed and he's not, even if he is one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Of course. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. It is Mariners opening day, and we are taking a big look, not just at tonight, but at the season. So let's talk about our most realistic and unrealistic expectations for the Mariners in 2024. That's coming your way next.
Bump and Stacey, live from T-Mobile Park on opening day.
We are live from T-Mobile Park. It's opening day for the Seattle Mariners. Luis Castillo on the mound against the Boston Red Sox. We are finally going to get a look at a team that we've only ever been able to wonder about in spring training. Finally, games actually matter. Now, we're going to be making a lot of predictions when it comes to tonight's game coming up later in the show. But before we get to any of it, our most realistic and unrealistic expectations for the Mariners season. Now, this is not like a bold take Thursday thing, which we did earlier in the show, Bump. This is something like this. My realistic expectation for the Mariners season is that George Kirby has a great year. Mm-hmm. I think it's very realistic to expect someone who could one day be the ace on this staff have a really solid season. I'm not expecting he be a Cy Young finalist. I'm not even expecting that he be a nominee. I'm just expecting a really good season. My most unrealistic expectation is that I don't want champagne anywhere near the Astros clubhouse. I don't want the Astros anywhere near the top of the AL West. That is my unrealistic expectation because this is obviously a good Astros team. They're dealing with some injuries to start the year, so the Mariners need to get off to a quick start. But my unrealistic expectation is the Mariners pull so far ahead, maybe the Rangers do too, that the Astros can't touch the playoffs.
No champagne for those guys.
None for you.
Do you like champagne?
I love champagne, especially when mixed with orange juice.
That's the only way I drink it.
Yeah, I love a mimosa.
Yeah, other than that, I don't get down with the champagne.
I love a mimosa because you can also have it at like 10 a.m.
No excuse, right?
No, it's a very morning appropriate drink.
I like it. So
it's classy.
My realistic prediction or
expectation
is that Julio is an all-star for the third straight season.
I think that's realistic.
It's very realistic in my opinion. I think he's one of the best outfielders in the game. I think he's done nothing but get better and better. He's coming off of what he calls a sophomore slump, which I think is ridiculous. I would love to be in the majors and have 10 seasons just like he did last year. You make a whole lot of money in this league, but I appreciate the expectations that he has on himself. So, yeah. To ask Julio to be a three-time All-Star, I think it's completely realistic. Mm-hmm. Possible. It's probably going to happen.
Unrealistic expectation.
I'm looking at this team, their stats throughout the season last year.
Okay.
Now, as a team, their best month when it comes to OPS, you would guess it, was in August.
Mm-hmm.
All right, team OPS was 864. So I'm going to say unrealistic expectations that this team's OPS does not drop beneath 800 for the whole season. Probably
that
not going to go down.
That is,
but
that
you know
is,
what? You know, dreamers can dream.
That is a dream.
You know, that's what I'm doing.
And I really like it. Here's why I like the conversation about expectations. I think we should have them.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a team, you know, look at the Kraken in their first year. We were like, let's everyone just have fun. You know what I mean? Everyone get some drinks. Let's have fun with this thing. This is not that. This is a team that has been around. This is a team that is, frankly, and I know I said I wanted to have fun today, let fans down before.
Yeah.
This is a team that has made promises, that has been in a rebuild, that is that has a superstar, that has an amazing pitching staff. This is a team that should have expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And all I found myself wondering, Bump, is, well, how high should mine be? Is it fair? Like, is ALCS fair? Is ALDS fair? Is World Series fair? I don't think World Series is fair, but is playoffs fair? I think so. Playoffs is my bar, right?
Yeah.
When it comes to expectations,
I
is
think
it
that's
yours?
Fair. No, I think that's fair. A lot of people want more. When we look at the text lines, they want them to win a series at least once they get into the playoffs. And I think that is a realistic expectation too. But I think right now, you just have to get in. You look. Every analyst I hear talk about baseball and which teams win the World Series, typically not the best teams all the time. It's more about just getting in and having a chance, right? Teams getting in the NCAA tournament. And you know, most of these teams don't have a chance, but they're in, so that gives you something to believe in. That's what I'm talking about with this team. Get in, because I think they have the talent. If they were to get in, they can make something happen. And why do I believe that? It's because of the arms that they have. It's because of Julio, the MVP. So, no, I'm right there with you. I think ALCS is I think it's possible.
I mean, I think
today.
It's possible.
Expectation, though?
I can't tell if I'm being playoffs. Too negative by playoffs. Thinking that ALCS is not. I would love it to be like the Dodgers and enter a season saying World Series is the expectation and it should not be less than a World Series win because of what you've spent. That's just not what the Mariners are.
No, you also don't have the roster that the Dodgers
have. Of course
have.
Not.
Yeah, that roster, yeah, you better be talking World Series.
Exactly, but I also think the Mariners should give fans reason to expect playoffs.
I think they will. I honestly think they will. It's not just me working for the flagship station or being here at T-Mobile. I really think that they can do that, and that is a real expectation.
What gives you the most confidence?
The arms, of course.
Yeah.
Right? And then the development. I think that I've seen over the past few years, like seeing a guy like JP transform his body and transform his game
mm-hmm.
is a true sign of development. I'm seeing Ty France cut all that weight and go to drive line and do his thing. That's development. Seeing Julio put that pressure on himself and saying, look, last year wasn't good enough. That's self-development and giving himself expectations. And then the pieces that they've added. Of course, it wasn't the offseason that we wanted, but this team did get better. So I see the moves and I go, they're banking on the data being correct. And there is a possibility the data is correct. Why? Because it's data. These aren't numbers that are just grabbed out of thin air and say, all right, this is what we think they're going to do. No, this is what these players have done over the course of their career. Therefore, it allows you to project what's going on. So as of now, opening day, I'm looking at the data and I'm looking at the development. I'm looking at the guys on the roster and I'm saying, yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, I think, look, if you've got a team where Julio is playing like an AL MVP, where George Kirby or Luis or anyone else looks anything like a Cy Young candidate, you should be a playoff team.
Yeah.
Like, I would hate to see some elite pitching and some elite offense not be rewarded by support. And I think that what this team attempted to do this offseason, what this front office has attempted to do, was to build that support. I'm not looking at Polanco, even though he's done that, as being a sure thing for 30-plus home runs. I am not expecting a 2021 season from him. I am not looking at Mitch Garver saying, you know, I'm expecting this guy to play out of his mind. I'm not even looking at Mitch Haniger saying I'm expecting him to be healthy. But I am looking at these names saying, okay, here were attempts to add that support
mm-hmm.
and to add just enough pieces that if enough goes right, you've got a really solid team. Does that make watching a season nerve-wracking? Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you have to expect... You are expecting Mitch to be healthy, because if he's not healthy, then this team I don't think reaches some of the
I'm not expecting him to be healthy. I'm expecting him to play more than like I'm expecting more than like 20 games. Like I'm expecting a note. I'm expecting him to play more than he did with San Francisco.
What's a good number? I think he's played 60 something with San Francisco, right? What do you say? If Mitch plays how many games this team is in the playoffs?
I think if Mitch touches 100 games, it's a good season
for
him.
That was my number, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that that's where I'm looking at it going, okay, you can now expect mm-hmm. he'll have, 20 plus home runs, maybe, inching close to that. I mean, if J.P. Crawford, J.P. had almost 20 home runs last year.
What do you have, 19?
19.
Yeah.
I mean, Ty only had 12, hit 250. You get a better season from him.
Last year too,
Ty was banged up. Mm-hmm. He was dealing with stuff last year. Yeah. I mean, you had 30 plus home runs from Julio and Cal. You throw one more 30 plus home run guy in there. That's not a bad squad if the pitching holds up.
Chamon.
Assuming the pitching stays healthy again. All right, you guys, we are going to obviously stick with the Mariners. So Shannon Dreher is going to join us. We're going to take a look around the world of baseball. We're going to have Bump and Curtis call their shot for tonight's game. We've still got a player to talk to. Mariners reliever Gabe Spire is going to join us later in the show. Don't go anywhere. It's opening day.